This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
And I'm Kia Miakonatis.
And this season on NPR's Invisibilia, we take on control.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hampton, and you're listening to ICYMI. In case you missed it, Slate's podcast about internet culture. And while every episode of ICYMI is so special in my little Pisces heart, even though I can't remember half the episodes we've done, today's episode is one that I'll never forget. It's a really special one. Since 2015, NPR's podcast Invisibilia has explored, quote, the intangible forces that shape human behavior. Things like ideas, beliefs, assumptions, and emotions. It's one of those shows that when I first started listening to podcasts was really often recommended to me. And for years, the show was hosted by Hannah Rosin, Lulu Miller, and Elise Spiegel. Until 2020, when the show was taken over by Kia Miakonatis and Yoe Shaw, both of who will be joining me later in the show. Our conversation was far-ranging and fun and honestly really affirming, and I'm really excited for y'all to hear it after a short break.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. Today, I'm joined by Yoe Shaw and Kia Miakonatis, the co-hosts of NPR's Invisibilia. I am so excited to have them here. I kind of feel like I'm in the presence of podcast royalty.
Oh my gosh, stop.
Don't even know what that means.
Wow.
We'll get into that. Nice. But just so everyone can identify y'all's voices, hi, Yoe.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having us.
Of course. And hi, Kia.
Hey. Glad to be here.
I'm, as I've said, so excited to have you here. So I'm going to ask you the question that I think I ask every single guest, which is, what were your first internet memories?
Ooh, I love this question. I'm like, I'm ready. Picture it. It's sixth grade. It's 1994.
Ooh, take me back. You
know, someone sends my dad a CDR, like, you know, a CD-ROM of the internet, AOL, you know? Yes. And then you, like, put the disc in, and all of a sudden you're hearing all these noises. Set up my first AOL account, kstarburst@aol.com. And then I distinctly remember, like, going to school and like being in like, I think I was in sixth grade, and the only other person who had email was like Amy Zakowski, and be like, all right, Amy, I guess we're emailing now because we're the only two people who have this thing. But yeah, a very cherished memory of like getting access to the internet and just the way it was a place that like you went to, like I am going online, and it was a physical act.
Yes, that's beautiful.
Okay, so for me, the first memory that pops up of the internet is, like, me and my best friend Ingrid's house. And, like, she had AIM, AOL Messenger, Instant Messenger, and she convinced me to get an account. And I distinctly remember, like, trying it, like, being at her house and, like, messaging with, like, people at school and, like, some strangers and, like, her older cousin who I thought was cute. And, like... After a certain while, I remember being like, nope, this isn't for me. Like, this kind of communication and messaging just didn't work for me. And I feel like that has stayed with me until now, because I just don't, like, if people DM me on Twitter or Insta, like, I am so bad at messaging. I can't believe I bamboozled my way onto an esteemed podcast like yours about the internet. Because like, I don't consider myself an internet person in the slightest. Like, I am constantly 6 months to 5 years behind.
Wow. I mean, there's a podcast for that. You don't have to keep up.
As long as I have your blessing, then I will feel better
about it. Oh, of course.
About it.
I mean, if everyone kept up, I'd be out of a job. So you are so are so blessed in not keeping up.
I see. Is that, I'm just so curious, is that like a big portion of like your listenership, like people like me who like desperately need translators and guides to the internet?
That is kind of a big portion of our audience, though we try to make sure that people who are extremely online also get something from the show. Mm. But like a good portion of our audience, we actually have a lot of parents who listen to us who are just like, thank God I can keep up with my 15-year-old. Like I'm not asking them what a JoJo Siwa is. They're always surprised that I know what's happening online because I listen to your show. And I'm always just like, wow.
You're doing a real service, healing families, generation across generation. Amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought I would be doing. Kia, do you consider yourself an internet person?
Yes. I literally have just set my phone to the black and white setting. It's something for people with disabilities. If you have like overwhelming colors, you could set your phone to be black and white. But it's also really good to do if you're addicted to your phone. And so whenever I find myself like I'm picking it up too much, Twitter is not, there's nothing left at the bottom of this Twitter bucket, then I'll just set it to black and white. And it turns down like the attractiveness of the phone because it's not, I mean, so much of the phone's attraction is like it's colors, it's sparkling, it's a lot of things. And so when it's in like grayscale black and white, then it's just kind of like, it's not as addictive. And I have to cut myself off. I don't have my finger on the pulse of like all the internet happenings, but I super love going on Twitter and being like, I don't know anything about this. Let me just dig into this random, like, you know, when like everyone online is talking about some random thing that I know nothing about, I'm like happy to just sort of like dig around, try to get to the kernel of like the video that people are talking about and be like, all right, cool. It's like eavesdropping in a cafeteria. That's how I feel about most of like the internet and specifically Twitter, which has the most addictive qualities to me.
For the record, though, everyone needs to know that Kia is definitely one of the, like, she's definitely the most online, like the most internet savvy, like on our team.
Which isn't saying much. I will dip my toe in. I'm not a prolific poster at all, but I love to lurk. I'm a lurker all day.
Ooh, I feel like lurkers always have the best of both worlds in that they are not necessarily being perceived, but they are seeing everything that's happening. So you don't have to worry about being caught up in the drama, but you will be caught up with the drama.
I mean, as someone who loves to eavesdrop and be nosy, it's my favorite space to be in, of just like digging in deep to somebody else's life. No consequences.
And then you became a journalist.
It's perfect.
Right. I get paid to do it now.
A straight line.
So actually, speaking of getting paid to do it, that's kind of a perfect segue into my next question. What has it been like taking over like an already established podcast?
You know, I would say it was unnerving at first, but also really exciting, I think, to like for me personally, as someone who loved the show from day one, you know, like just had been listening to it. It was like my special little audio medicine, especially those earlier seasons where they talked a lot. Like it was basically like self-help, which I love as a genre. So I was super into the podcast from jump. And then I think to get the opportunity to lead it in this way has been like such a massive learning experience and blessing, and it's been exciting, and I've been exposed to so many different things. And also it's a lot of pressure, you know, people love this show and have a lot of ideas, but it's also been really gratifying, I think, to be like, okay, people really love this show, I really love this show, can I show up as myself, which is different from what the hosts were like, and will people stay around for that type of stuff, you know, and I think for the majority it has been like a really positive thing. And yeah, it's it definitely, it's not without its challenges, but also extremely rewarding just to be like, oh, this thing I loved and now I help make it. It's really nice.
Yeah. So tell me how exactly this takeover happened.
So basically what happened was the host decided to leave. And
bear in mind, this is summer 2020.
And basically, like, I think for a little bit, we all thought that that was it for the show. Like, that's what I thought. This wasn't, like, officially, like, we were just kind of, like, in this uncertain time. Like, we just had no idea what was going on. I thought my Invisibilia chapter was over because I'd been at the show, you know, starting from the second year that it was, you know, in season. And then somebody named Kiamia Kanatis calls me up. And I will never forget it. I was in the backyard of my old house in West Philly, which was a tiny, 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 tiny backyard. And Kia just like, you were basically like, I think that we should save the show. I think you and me should co-host. And here's why. And I just remember, like, the idea had never occurred to me that, like, me personally, like, I would ever be a host. Like, I think of myself mainly as a producer and reporter. And to even, like, think about hosting Invisibilia, like, I just, like, it was such a wild idea to me. And so I was just, like, tongue-tied and just kind of like, you're crazy. Like, get out.
Like, and it was, like, was not for nothing. It was a crazy idea. Like, but it was just that time. Like, summer 2020 was like, anything could happen. You better know how to dance. Like, that's how I felt about it. It was just like, things are falling apart, but if you're smart, you can learn how to put them back together. And so that's what I saw happening here, was just like, it's falling apart. And I mean, bless Yelwe for telling the version where I'm the main character, because it's like, you should hear all the different versions of the story where someone else was like, and then I thought. So, you know, I think it was in the air. And so I was kind of riding that wave of like, we're just in a moment where this opportunity is more feasible.
But like, I will say, like, for me, as like, yes, it was in the air. Like, lots of people were like maybe thinking about it, et cetera, et cetera. I hadn't really thought about it. And you just like gave me this like, you know, those like speeches in those Hallmark movies where, you know, like the high school coach is like the team is like down 30 points on the football field. And then the coach like gives like a speech gassing up the team. Like, you gave me, like, I had never been gassed up like that before by anyone. It was incredible to just, and also for us to do that with each other. Like, that was what it felt
having
like.
Having only worked together for a year. It was a lot of just like, let's go for it energy, where it's like, the worst they could say is no.
Let's do it. Let's trust in each other and our team. Like, not for nothing, like, there's a whole team of producers that were part of this effort. And we like pitched, you know, the execs at NPR put together this PowerPoint while we were also holding down, you know, we were working on other shows at the time because our show was on hiatus. And then, we gave
this thing,
gave the pitch deck. And then Anya Grundman, I'll never forget, she like cried at the end of it.
VP of programming. Yeah. She was just like, wow. You know, I always say it's all about timing. And this is just like really great timing. And I think she was really glad to have two people come up with a solution and like have the energy around it of like, this thing doesn't have to go away. We're all really passionate about it and we want to keep it going. So
yeah,
that's really exciting. I'm picturing like a Friday Night Lights moment of this like inspirational speech. And it's really like, it's getting me. I'm really inspired, but it is time for us to take a short break. When we come back, I will still be joined by Kia and Yowei, and we'll be talking all about their relationships with the internet.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Hey, listeners, whether you love true crime or comedies, celebrity interviews, news, or even motivational speakers, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue, right? And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. Enter the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. The Name Your Price tool puts you in charge of your auto insurance by working just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance. Then they'll show you a variety of coverages that fit within your budget, giving you options. Now, that's something you'll want to press play on. It's easy to start a quote, and you'll be able to choose the best option for you fast. It's just one of the many ways you can save with Progressive Insurance. Quote today at progressive.com to try the Name Your Price tool for yourself and join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, y'all. If you love our podcast, then please consider subscribing to Slate Plus. When you subscribe to Slate Plus, you get no ads on any Slate podcasts, including the one you're listening to right now. You'll be supporting the show. I See Why Am I would not be possible without the support of Slate Plus subscribers. You will also get bonus segments or episodes on shows like Slow Burn, Hit Parade, Mom and Dad Are Fighting, and Big Mood, Little Mood. You will also get unlimited reading on the Slate website, which means you get access to every single article and advice column on Slate without ever, ever, ever hitting the paywall. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That is slate.com/ICYMI+. And we're back with Kia Miyaka Natisse and Yowei Shaw, the host of Invisibilia. And there's actually a question I've been wanting to ask other podcast hosts for a while. So Netflix's Bling Ring documentary, which we talked about on a recent episode, really gets into how, like, in this early, like, aughts moment, this overlap of, like, reality television and, like, gossip websites and how that closed the gap between celebrities and individuals. And I think about that a lot with, like, influencers and how much ownership people feel over, like, influencers and how podcasters in some way, because so many are by influencers, end up falling into the same trap where, like, I think consumers can't quite tell the difference between them.
Right. Because the internet has this flattening effect.
Exactly.
Like, it just, like, flattens context. And you're just, like, on the same phone, the same device, the same computer, interacting with all these different people.
Exactly. And I feel like media companies even promote that, especially with women or people of color, where there's this almost expectation that we divulge more of our lives, like, our expertise is in our experience. And I feel like the show Invisibilia feels a lot more personal since y'all took over. And I'm curious as to whether that is, like, a conscious choice y'all made, or if that's just, like, something you guys were interested in, or if there was, like, external pressure.
That's interesting. There was no external pressure. We get to make whatever we're interested in making, basically, which is, like, amazing and feels so special and such a privilege. I will say this. I think, like, for aesthetic reasons, Kia and I are really interested in authenticity, you know? So, like, for lots of reasons beyond aesthetic too, but for sonic aesthetic reasons, I think, like, we were interested in bringing more conversation to the show and also just, like, being people who interact with each other in these stories and are telling each other stories that in our intros to stories, like, why we're interested in sharing this with our audience. I don't know. I just find myself more interested in listening to those kinds of narrative podcasts myself. Like, I find the really stiff, kind of, like, at a distance, like, we're going to, like, pretend there's this artifice of, like, I'm not a person and I'm just telling you a story and da 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 da. It doesn't feel alive to me. And I think that that's something that we were kind of interested in, is, like, injecting more, I don't know, just, like, life and weirdness and just, like, spontaneity into these very, very polished stories that was kind of, like, the style before.
I mean, I hear you on the whole, like, you have to offer up yourself, you know. I think the way I see it is a little bit different in that expertise is always changing. You know, it's like one day it'll be a study that says X, and then 2 years later, that study will be refuted. And so I am interested in like the experiential as the form of knowledge that we uphold, because even though your understanding of an experience might change, what happened in the experience will not, you know? And so in some ways, like I'm interested in that intimacy. And I think also from another perspective of like showing the hand of the maker, you know, I think there's something that is slightly deceptive in a lot of different documentaries or news features where we present a story as if this is the way it is. And you never like reveal the fact until the credits that it's like, it's 50 people who helped shape this thing. And this particular person had this particular aspect that they really wanted to highlight for their own personal reasons. And so we never get exposed to the reality of what it means to make work, which is it's always influenced by the maker. There is never like you have to account for, it's not just the measurement, you have to account for the measurer. And so I think a lot of times in the work that I'm doing, it's like, I want people to know that this is coming from my perspective. I don't want to pretend that I am a voice of God on high who knows this knowledge. It's like, no, I'm a regular person. I'm trying to figure this stuff out just like you, you know? And to me, for me personally, that builds trust with the audience, which is something I'm really invested in. I never want an audience to think I'm an authority. That's not how I see myself, and that's not really how I want to move through space. But I do want them to feel like I'm being honest with them. I'm giving them as much information as I think is appropriate, but maybe more information out there. But you know that my hand is on it. And so that can help maybe differentiate from a place of like, this is exactly what it is, but instead it's, this is how Kia sees it. And that feels more honest to me than being like, I've got the, like, I would never be comfortable personally saying like, I know all the things. It's like, I just can't.
Yeah. And just to like pick up on something you said, Kia, like, I do think this changing notion of expertise, like, I think that was in our pitch deck that like we were interested in telling stories that featured different kinds of experts, not just people with PhDs, not just people who wrote books, like not just people from the ivory tower. Like this season, I think like in all the seasons of Invisibilia 2.0, we have a bunch of experts that have expertise from years of experience living in a particular world or doing a particular craft or thing. And so I think it's like almost baked into, yeah, like the political, I don't know, philosophy of like what we're trying to do now.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Getting into kind of like the way y'all think about the show, I feel like Invisibilia as a show is about like the invisible forces at play. And one of them that obviously I think about a lot is the internet, and these kind of like guiding hands of social media algorithms that we know are there. We don't really know how they work for a lot of different reasons, but we still refer to them almost lovingly. Like the idea that like the TikTok algorithm knows me so well is something that I run into a lot. And while a lot of y'all's episodes aren't like internet specific, the internet almost feels like a silent character in a lot of y'all's episodes. And so I'm really curious as to how y'all conceptualize the internet as like one of these invisible forces in our lives as you're thinking about episodes.
That's such an interesting question. Can I buy us some time? But also I'm actually really interested. Can you like say more about, like, can you give an example of like, yeah, an episode, definitely, like a time when you saw the internet as like the silent character in one of our episodes?
Yeah, so I was listening to the episode about power allergies, and a lot of the way that your expert talked about like power and the way people think about it now, or like the discourse around how women think about power, it felt very adjacent to like the kind of girl boss gatekeep gaslight like thing that's going on right now. And so a lot of the kind of things that y'all reference, really, I'm like kind of immediately thinking of like, oh, this is how this is playing out on the internet. Like this is like, it almost is like a feedback loop to me. And then Kia, your episode about the black freediver, I was thinking about I was thinking about the Black Little Mermaid discourse, where I was just like, these spaces where we don't belong, like, obviously it's the taking over a Disney franchise, but it's also like the imagery of Black people in water is so foreign to a lot of people. And so all of this was kind of playing out as I was listening to these episodes, and I was just thinking, like, it's not like you're mentioning Instagram or Twitter or like TikTok like in every single episode, but it almost feels like it's there.
I love that. I mean, I'm like, you're giving us mad content ideas. I'm like, you're absolutely right. We've never really thought about the internet, but you're right. It's invisible. It's everywhere. It's like this ever-present thing that I think can, like, we can get lost in ourselves. And so, I mean, I appreciate you just like reflecting that back to our show of like, seriously, that's how you see us.
Yeah.
And definitely gives me a lot to think of, because it's an immense part of the work that we do, down to, you know, the ability to work remotely. Like, it's everywhere. And it is so, because it's everywhere, it makes it hard to examine, because it's like, I actually have a fantasy. This is a new fantasy that's developed for me related to my phone addiction, which is at some point next year, I'm going to get a dumb phone.
Really?
And just try it. Just try it for a month. And just like at least experience what it was like when the internet was localized to a computer that was in a location. You know, it wasn't like constantly in my pocket. It's like, if you want to go online, you have to go. I'm like, I kind of miss that distance between myself and the internet of like not always just being like, it's always there. And it kind of feels like a nasty addiction sometimes.
Yeah, just to echo what Kia said, I feel like you have pointed out a blind spot for us, actually, that I'm going to be thinking about a lot after this conversation. Because
I didn't mean
it
to send y'all into an existential crisis.
We love it. We love existential crises.
We do. That's like our jam, actually. We're so comfortable in that space. But actually, like, because we do think, we have like a gut checklist of questions where we're like thinking about like what are like systems at play that are really critical to mention in this story, like things like that. And I like the internet is not on there, but like race, gender, like all these other like huge systems that we really care about surfacing and being really strategic and smart about when we tell our stories are there. So like I feel like we have something to bring up at our team meeting next week, perhaps.
Wow. I love to change the world.
Welcome. We'll give you a producer credit if it goes forward.
I'm just spreading producer credits across the world. That's all I ever want. I always want to just be a friend of the show. Like the someone people mention, they're just like, our friend Rachel. And I'm like, that's me.
Love it. Done and done. Yes.
That was actually kind of my last question.
Wow. That was fast and fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was great. I mean, do y'all have anything else that y'all want to talk about? Do you have any burning questions about the internet?
It's funny, as we were sitting here and it's like, it's an internet show. You talk about internet things. And I remembered this thing that I've recently learned that is just like burning on my chest. And I feel like this is the perfect place to unload it, because I can't tweet about it because my friend follows me and I'm pretty sure I would get in trouble. But I'm like, this is too much good information. Have you heard of being an IG pickup artist, like an Instagram pickup artist? Do you know anything about these strategies?
Say more.
Do we have time? I mean, it's really sent me in a spiral, because my friend has taught me about her friend's methodology of using Instagram to shop for dates. And let me just break it down for you really, really quickly. So here's her strategy. One, you find someone who you might be attracted to, think is a decent person, but maybe they're not available or you don't want to date that person. You go through the people they follow.
Brilliant.
Because then now you're in the network. You're in the network. You can go through. You can see who's cute, who's not. Yeah. Who are you feeling? Who's not? Who do you have things in common with? Then you find someone you like. You reply to a story. You do not do a DM slide. You reply to a story. Because if you do a DM slide and you're not on their friends list, it might get sent into, you know, like the third place where no one ever checks. But if you do,
brilliant.
This information.
This is bulletproof.
This has been A-B testing.
Yes.
Right. But the pièce de résistance is to make a collection, which I have never done on Instagram, but you make a collection of the accounts that you want to like shop through. So you can just save them all to an IG collection so you can keep. I mean, it was really, it's pickup artist level skill and mastery.
Or
I
just
mean,
efficient and yeah. smart dater.
It's a lot, but it has just been burning me up that to have this information. I have tried it slightly. I don't know if I'm really built for this world, but I am like so admiring of this system that she's created, and that like she passed it on to my friend who passed it on to me, and now I'm going to put it on this podcast so the whole world.
Wow.
I think this needs to be a guest.
No, she needs to start a podcast about this. This reminds me of this like conversation I actually saw recently where someone was talking about how they get their meal paid for, which is they just go to an expensive spot. Yeah. And they're like, I'm going to go to the spot whether I know someone there or not, just make eye contact with whoever's there by themselves, and by the end of it I can usually get my meal paid for. And it started off this entire discourse about the ways in which like the tactics of sex workers are being reframed and like repackaged in the internet era. And this kind of reminds me of that.
Yes, that's why I say it's a pickup artistry thing, because it's like actually when I got to like the info about creating a collection, it gave me a slight ick feeling, because it reminded me of like when men compile like lists of women, or like I'm sure you remember the group chat, there was some thing going around where like men are on a big group chats and they're just sharing your nudes. It just kind of reminds me of that. So that's why I'm like, it's slightly icky, but it is also like, it's pickup artistry. Everyone has their own methodologies. I'm not gonna judge, but it is also like a gender reversal thing of like, well, because a woman is doing this. I don't know.
I respect the hustle.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. In the vein of random other internet things that I want to get off my chest, I have
internet
one actually.
Yes.
We're gonna make that a new segment, internet confessional.
Okay, so I have a problem where you remember how like Reply All had like email forgiveness day. I feel like, in case you missed it, can you invent a tweet forgiveness day where you are allowed to tweet tweets that are no longer relevant to the current, because everything moves so fast on Twitter. It's too fast for me. I'm slow. I'm a slow-brained person. And so, like, by the time I, like, think of a tweet that I actually would like to share, it's like the moment's passed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so that is my question for, like, an internet podcast.
Yeah,
that I would
we can do that.
You all to like take on for me.
Yes,
a personal holiday.
I mean, it might be funny just to have people send in what they would want to be forgiven. Just like, what is the tweet you would like to be forgiven on this day?
Oh yeah, it's that's real. A good idea.
Yeah, wow. But I know exactly what you mean. Where it's like, I have the kind of similar issue where I'll tweet something and then think of a better version of the tweet like 30 minutes later, and I'm like, oh, if I had just waited.
Yeah. But even I feel like it's like for me, it's like the obligate. It's not so much like tweets that I feel like are clever or whatever. It's like the obligatory category of tweets that I feel like to be a good Twitter citizen to like colleagues and friends. But I'm just like so slow that by the time it's like out in the, it's like already way months past the launch. I'm like, ah, I never did that thing. I never tweeted the thing that I wanted to do.
You
wow,
can still
I sound
tweet
like
it.
An old person right now.
I'm going to personally benevolently forgive you and say that if you want to tweet something 6 months after someone's launch, I feel like they'd appreciate it. They'd be like, you're re-upping it. Everyone's forgotten about it.
Yes, yes, yes.
I like
you're the long
reframe.
Tail of marketing.
Exactly, exactly. You're that second wave of marketing that all the publishers want. You personally.
Wow, I feel forgiven. I feel released. Thank you.
Wow. Wow, I'm so glad the internet confessional has come. We're going to keep you. I've given you some stuff. You've given me some stuff.
Yes.
This is the best interview.
Can we be, friends of the pod now.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us. This was so fun.
Yes. Yay. Thank you for letting me unburden myself. I feel so much better.
Once again, that was Kia Miyaka-Natisse and Yowei Shaw, the hosts of Invisibilia. You can catch them on every single Friday for this season on Invisibilia. All right, that is the show. I will be back in your feed on Saturday, so please subscribe. It is the best way to never miss an episode, to never miss an internet confessional. Feel free to send in your internet confessionals. Please leave a rating and review on Apple or Spotify and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @icymi_pod, which is where you can DM us your internet confessionals. And you can also always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com. ICOIMI is produced by Daniel Schrader and me, Rachel Hampton. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's VP of audio. See you online. Or not. It is funny because right before we started, I was like, we've never lost an audio file before, but it's never going to happen. And both Daniel and Daisy were like, shut up.
Oh, like, that's just like calling upon the podcasting gods to smite us.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.